Good afternoon. I'm here at in the Gawler Culture and Heritage Centre with the Gawler Culture and Heritage Centre coordinator, Jacinta. Welcome, Jacinta.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
And Jacinta's going to talk about the wonderful new exhibition that's just opened up, Threads of Life, which is currently showing for the next about 10, 11 months in the Gawler Civic Centre. So what is the concept behind the exhibition?
So with Threads of Life, we were looking at to highlight different parts of the Gawler Heritage Collection, and one of the items that we have in the collection is the Nankerville Moldenhauer Wedding Collection. And while lots of heritage community groups and heritage collections have wedding dresses, this collection is quite unique because it came in not just with the wedding dress, but with all of the receipts associated with the wedding, all of the cards, the acceptances, all of the details that were associated with this young couple who got married in Gawler in 1953. So it was an opportunity to really understand their wedding. So what they didn't just keep the dress, they kept everything.
So the costs and it gives you a really...
Yes, it was a really understanding. And so that wedding dress was made in Gawler by a Gawler woman. Mm-hmm. The couple got married in Gawler. They lived on the outskirts of town. And so that sort of got us thinking about those big moments in people's lives. So many people partner up, not everybody, but many people do. And then we were thinking about deaths because, as we all know, in Gawler, we've had a lot of work at Pioneer Park recently on the wall. And in undertaking that work, council had to do some digging right up against the wall. In doing that digging, we discovered some objects that had been buried in amongst the graves. And we wanted to show those objects to the community. So we thought, right, well, we can talk about deaths and we can talk about marriages, and that leads us, of course, to births. And so we wanted to include some information about births in Gawler, which right up until early in the 20th century generally occurred at home with a midwife or a well-experienced woman, if you were lucky. But certainly in the early days of the town, there were plenty of women who delivered their own babies with the help of their husbands, as there were no other people around. So we wanted to talk about births and how much that's changed, how infant mortality was very high in the 19th century. At one stage in the Australian colonies, 30% of babies died, babies and young children, which is a terrible, terrible tragedy. So we wanted to talk about those three things and what binds those things together are threads of life. And that's how we came up with our title.
Well, if you look at the memorial headstone up at Pioneer Park, most of those burials are infants.
They are. And one of the things that we know about the memorial headstone up there is that we know there are about 400 people we know are in Pioneer Park. But when you look at the people we know who died in Gawler in the period that that cemetery was operational, they must be there too. And we suspect there's another 400 people who don't appear in any cemetery anywhere else who died in Gawler before Willison Cemetery was opened, so they must be there. So we are creating a little bit of a list of everybody we know is probably there, but we don't actually have a physical historical record of them being there as well.
Because records weren't complete?
That's right.
Really, even surprisingly into the 20th century, there's a lot of gaps in the records.
That's exactly right. Records are always how well the record keeper put the information down, how legible it is, whether the records got disturbed or destroyed. So we know with the Pioneer Park Cemetery that some of the churches kept good records, and so we know that their people are in there, but there are no records of who is where, and there never have been. So it's not possible to say so-and-so was in this plot or that plot. We just know that they are there. So, so that's been a bit of a challenge. So as part of the remediation work on the wall, it became necessary to excavate three people who had been interred in the cemetery, and that was done under the supervision of archaeologists from Flinders University. But we don't know who they are because there's no record of where people were put. So we can't notify families. Yeah. We don't know. Yeah.
You can only get the gender and the...
Gender and age. So the archaeologists can tell their approximate age, they can tell their gender, and they can often tell what the person died of based on whether there's inflammation in the bones, whether there's long-term sickness, short-term sickness, things like that.
It's amazing what they can tell from... And strontium, now strontium analysis, where they grew up.
Yes,
yeah, amazing.
The archaeology team were very excited at this opportunity because it gave them a better understanding of what people were eating.
Yes.
In Gawler, yes. You know, in this early colonial period in South Australia's history.
Yes, I imagine it was very much bread and basic vegetables and meat.
Yes, but interestingly enough, and when we were doing the research on maternal deaths, one thing that became apparent was that the first generation of women born in Australia, who then went on to have children, had a much higher survival rate than the women who initially came out here from the United Kingdom. And that's because many of the women who came out suffered from rickets as a child. Right. So they had malformed pelvises, so they died during childbirth. The Australian women born here, because they exposure to sunlight and plenty of vitamin D, didn't have that correlation with having rickets, so they started to be a much healthier maternal population giving birth.
I think also Australian people generally had their own back garden and grew their own vegetables.
Yes.
Well, a lot of people coming out of the industrial towns, especially in the north of England, they had no garden at all.
No.
So they wouldn't have had that access to fresh food that Australian poor had.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think because we have a moderate climate here, it was easy to grow things over, you know, the entire year, different vegetables. We certainly don't have that far north England severe temperatures. So I do think they had access to a wider variety of fruits and vegetables. The interesting thing we do know too from the records is that when Aboriginal people saw the settlers come here that had rickets, the physical, they showed them which native foods, they recognised that as rickets, and so they showed them which native foods to eat to avoid it.
Right.
So they passed that knowledge on because they could see the deformities that were caused by that.
I know that there was an interest in the 1880s, 90s in growing native foods that somehow didn't seem to get traction, which is a shame.
It is. It has traction again now.
Yes. So
there's a lot of interest in it.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Mm. But there was, as you say, there was an initial interest in what we can specialise here, what's here that isn't elsewhere, that understanding of more gourmet food.
So I thought it was very interesting. The original nursing homes were all founded by nurses, by women.
Yes.
And I think it reflects just how active women were back then. There's a bit of a concept that women didn't work in the past, but they certainly did, and they achieved big things.
They did. So we have records of Nurse Greenslade, who opened the first hospital in Gawler. But we also know that the doctors, their wives, were generally very important parts of their practices too.
Yes.
And they attended to people. When you've got a community and only a small number of doctors, the doctor's already out. And the wife, with her medical knowledge, was attending to the people. So we certainly have records of that. And we have the doctors had hospitals, small hospitals associated with their homes, and their wives were looking after the people in there as well.
Yes, I know. Mrs. Popham carried on the practice after he died, and she practiced in her own right as a doctor, even though she wasn't qualified.
No.
But because the community had so much faith in her.
Absolutely, that experienced her skills for a long period of time, and they felt very comfortable with that.
Another thing I noted was a lot of beautiful old wedding photos, and I love old photos, and of course the wedding was when a lot of people were photographed.
Yes.
That was their big day, and
That's exactly right.
But a lot of the early weddings, the absence of the right wedding dress.
Yes.
They wore their best Sunday best, no matter what colour it was.
That's exactly right. They couldn't afford to have a dress just for one occasion. And if you were getting a new dress, white wasn't very practical.
No.
In an era where dusty roads and wood fires and all of that sort of thing. So, yes, they wore their best, whatever colour that might be.
Yes. Well, the right wedding dress really only, I think it was in Victoria that popularised it.
Yes, Queen Victoria did. So she wore a white dress. Prior to that, wealthy people might wear gold or silver dresses to demonstrate their wealth. But she wore a white one and started that popularity. But again, it depended on availability of funds.
That's right. And even by 1880s, it was still people wore what was pragmatic.
Yes, yes. They were exactly right. You needed to be pragmatic.
So how long is this exhibition here
for? So this exhibition will be here probably until March next year. We'll certainly give plenty of notice about when it's closing.
Yep.
So we're going to put a few different things in during the year. We usually have some activity sheets in there for young people and school holidays. So there are some interactives in there. There's an organ in our marriages section, and there's some oral history in there, but feel free, if you know how to play an organ, to have a bit of a tune in there and do that. There are some flaps and things you can open. You can learn more about the Victorian fear of being buried alive and the contraptions that they invented to ensure that if you were buried alive, you could notify people that you weren't dead and you needed rescuing. So there's a few different quirky bits and pieces in the exhibition to sort of appeal to different people, we think.
Yes. And a beautiful morning dress.
A beautiful morning dress. You know, we're talking about white dresses for weddings, yes. But while many people didn't wear a white dress, it was expected if you lost a close family member that you would wear black. Mm. And we have records of people where it says, you know, Papa died in the morning and mother and aunt were dyeing everyone's clothes black in the afternoon. Yes. Again, they couldn't afford different clothes. They had to dye what they had black so
also
that they would wear that.
The first off-the-shelf dresses were morning dresses.
They were. They were the first off-the-shelf dresses. So some enterprising people in the UK thought people needed these black dresses.
And they needed them instantly.
And there were some people who could afford them.
Yeah.
And so they started to manufacture them in certain sizes and people could buy those. Normally, people who went to a dressmaker had fittings, you know, chose fabric. Yeah. It all took time. Mm. This was immediacy of the death and the funeral. And so, off the shelf. The dress on display in the Heritage Gallery is actually from Glasgow, manufactured in Glasgow for that purpose and sold in Australia as a mourning dress.
Any hints as to what next year's exhibition?
Oh, no, I can't give any hints on that
spoilers.
One yet.
No, spoilers.
No, we haven't quite locked it down, but it will be another aspect of Gawler's history. It will concentrate on items from the Gawler Heritage Collection, and hopefully it will be telling a few stories that people don't already know.
Yes. Thank you very much, Jacinta.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And it's a wonderful exhibition, so I recommend everyone to go and have a look. Thank you.